Welcome to the episode of Culture Crunch Podcast, soccer podcast for us, by us, top of the intersection of black culture and soccer. Got your boy here, Grego here. Got my homie, my mellow, my mean Mark. What's going on with you, dog?
What's good, man? What's good? Seeing you technically for the second week in a row.
Yeah. It's been a lot going on these past few weeks in the A, and definitely want to hit up on that. We got a special episode for you guys today, and got something that honestly, just by our dumb luck and just by the stuff that we do through our homies and peers online, you know, we have sometimes the stuff that we do happens to catch the attention of some people. And it just so happened that, like, back in February, I'm sure at least some of y'all probably noticed we did, we participated in a Black History League draft coordinated by our homies out in LA. Shout out to Comments SC. They're one of the newest supporter groups to the LA Galaxy scene, Black Run supporters group. Shout out to Matthew for getting that started. And I'm looking forward to seeing, actually, probably have you on the show pretty soon. And, get a chance to chop it up with you about that. But yeah, anyway, he set up this fantasy draft, and you know, got homies all over the Cultureverse to discuss what to do this draft. You know, you're drafting current players, former players, coaches, all that and everything. And yes, it caught the attention of one of our draft picks, of course, our team being AC Cultura. And it caught the attention of the Carolina Core FC and their chief sporting officer, that being Mr. Eddie Pope. And, you know, with the stuff that we do, of course, we, you know, we do concept kits and everything. Of course, I couldn't just, you know, leave AC Cultura just, you know, all dripless and everything. So, of course, I designed a kit for AC Cultura. And like I said, they caught the attention, and the people at Carolina Core reached out to us and said, hey, you want to have Mr. Pope on the show? I was like, yeah. of course, they're not even knowing that, like, Eddie Pope is like one of like my all time favorite players, Mark. Like, he's fucking up there. And you know, because of course, me being a DC United fan, going back to when the league first started, I was like I followed the whole team back in the day. And of course, him being a lanky, tall North Carolina kid like myself, I was like, yeah, like if I can get an opportunity to have him on the show, then absolutely. And it just might not be just him. I'm working on some stuff with the rest of the staff. Hopefully we can do that before the end of the next pro season. But yeah, needless to say, on today's show, we have Eddie Pope on the show. We have a special interview with him, and I'll be setting up in just a bit. And yeah, Mark, I have to tell you, like I said, dreams come true, man. Because, like, you know, he's chill as I don't know what. Like, I did have like one like right before I was about to jump on and start the interview, my internet just like wanted to just like spaz out for like a quick second, and just like nothing was connecting. I was like, no, of all times to suddenly just start spazzing on me. And like, thankfully it went by pretty quickly. And, but yeah, man, like I was ready to just start crying. It's like, no, this could not be happening. Because of course you want to make sure that you leave a good impression. And yeah, like thankfully that went by very quickly. So yeah, we do have Mr. Eddie Pope, Chief Sporting Officer with Carolina Core FC, on the show with an interview later on today. But in the meantime, of course, we've been off for a couple weeks. And of course, shout out to everybody who we linked up with last weekend in Atlanta for the She Believes Cup. Of course, shout out to Sky and Silves, and Ebony, and the rest of the Shea Butter team. I see you too, GA, for coming through and coming down. I mean, shout out to Dr. Odom for hooking us up in the AUC, like, dog. Like, honestly, I have to be honest with you, Mark. Like, the way things were going, I was very pessimistic as far as like just how things are going to work out, and it actually turned out working out pretty well.
It's funny. I feel like that's a kind of a life lesson, right? You know, it's like you plan for things to go a certain way. You know, there's a way you want them to go in your head, but a lot of times it doesn't play out like that exactly. But you know, things have a way of working out, and you know, I echo that sentiment to a degree. You know, I'm really happy with seeing the people I was able to see. You know, I hadn't seen Sky or Sills. I'm pretty sure I hadn't seen
them. Yeah, yeah, it's the first time you're meeting them. Yeah.
Yeah, well, no, I hadn't seen them since
NWC. Oh, yeah, that's right, DC. That's right. Yeah, you did see them in DC.
You know, it's been over a year, so mm-hmm. I get to see them. I actually walked by Andre from...
you rocked with tall-ass Andre.
Yeah, exactly. You know, like, he was... Because you know what stood out to me? He was wearing that fresh-ass, unserious pink hoodie. He wore that to the game, and I actually walked. We were outside the stadium. I was actually walking to meet y'all, and I walked by him, and I was like, "Oh, I reckon I bet that looks like him." But you know, it's downtown. He blended in with all the other tall buildings. So,
yeah, man. You know what? I'm a bit disappointed, Andre, because like you know, one thing I try to make sure of, especially with everybody coming into Atlanta for She Believes. So it's like, you know, I try to make sure, you know, I try to do my best to be a half decent host. And one thing that that we did before everybody kind of dispersed and went back to their own abodes and everything was I just, you know, just break bread a bit. You know, like we had we had brunch Sunday. Of course, I don't know why we went to Midtown, because I mean everyone was trying to like, you know, make the traveling a lot easier. So I get it. But I was just like, you know, you're asking for a lot when you're trying to get brunch done in Midtown. You just ask for
letting on a Sunday.
And of course, we rolled deep anyway. So it's like 9 or 10 of us. And then, of course, an extra homie, shout out to Doug for pulling up on us. And I was like they were just making us wait on purpose. I mean, just playing in our faces like, hey. Like people who came in after us were getting tables. People who were just as long as we were, like they were getting tables. I'm like, well, how about you just put this table together, and say, hey, y'all work this out. But I guess that was too much like right. But you know, like I mean, all in all, you know, the chop up session, the live show with Shea Butter on Friday, the tailgate on Saturday. Of course, we ended up getting moved, I think, twice that morning. And then, of course, the game itself. I'm actually kind of upset that I didn't realize that that Marta and Cristiani were called up for Brazil. I would have stayed longer for the second game because, like, by the time that first game ended, my back was like, I'm done. Because, of course, I was up early. I was, you know, trying to make it through the day. I was like, okay, we won. I'm out. And then I of course, he still had the Brazil Canada game. And yeah, I didn't realize that the legends, the goats were up in there. I would have absolutely stayed longer. But like I said, all in all, it was a great weekend. And hopefully you had a great time as well, Mark.
I did. You know, it was so funny. So that was the US Women's National Team game in Atlanta was the highest attended domestic friendly.
Yeah.
In the program's history. Listed attendance of 54,000. Of course, you know the whole thing about listed versus how many actual people were there. But it did seem like a significant number. And the second highest was actually the last U.S. Women's National Team game that I went to, which was in Philadelphia in 2019. Mm. It was after the World Cup. I think that was a, you know, one of those celebration tour.
Revenger tour.
Yeah. So, but no, it was great to see them again. So first time I've seen them in 5 years. And, you know, we saw hopefully a little taste of the next era.
You know what? I mean, of course, we still are still waiting on Emma Hayes to make her way back stateside from Chelsea. But, you know, just being able to see the women up in action course. I mean, the dynamics around the team are changing very, very rapidly. And then, of course, we're getting our, we got the first game back of Katarina Macario. It's been like nearly 2 years since her last cap with dealing with her knee injury. And who else came back?
Was it Mal?
Yeah. Mal Swanson's first game since her injury last year. So, you know, let's looking mighty brown up in there. Looking mighty brown.
It's a lot of melanin.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, aside from that, you know, it's been, I'll be honest with you, Mark. Given how things have gone this year, at least I feel like in the news with MLS, I feel like I just haven't been nearly as invested as I normally am. Like I actually, of course, we're recording this on Sunday. The home team played against Philly. Actually, didn't even go. Like I took care of some personal biz that I had to take care of. Did some a little bit of quick grocery shopping as well. Now I wasn't even tripping about it. I was like, you know, I'll get to it, and I'll know about you. Like I don't know if it's just the situation with the U.S. Open Cup. I don't know the situation with just so many things. I feel like that could be better and just aren't. And I don't know if it's just finally catching up to us. But I don't know. It feels weird, and I feel like I want to be invested. Especially I want to be invested still in the home team, but like. I feel like MLS as a whole, it's like I still have my season ticket. You know, I probably pulled up maybe three times this year. But otherwise, like it's like if I miss something, I'm not even tripping about it anymore. What about you?
Yeah, I echo those sentiments, and so I guess I'll work like in chronological order, like backwards, right?
Okay.
So most recently, like the Open Cup stuff, you know, the stuff with the referees. You know, I'm not gonna support. An organization using replacement employees, but you know, obviously that's been resolved. You know, I was kind of put off by their decision to not do the offered MLS season pass for T-Mobile customers. And you know, for context, Major League Baseball has been doing this for I think the last 7 or 8 years.
Oh wow.
T-Mobile customers get free MLB TV, which allows you to watch every game except in market teams, and then certain games that are on like ESPN, Fox, whatever. Right? Mm-hmm. But and you know they're committed to keep doing it until 2028 at least. That's when this current agreement is up until. And so it's like Major League Baseball, a much bigger sport, right?
Mm-hmm.
A much richer sport at least compared to MLS.
Yeah.
Still giving out their free stuff because they know like that'll keep customers coming back. And MLS does it for 1 year, and then they decided they're too good for it. So I don't have MLS season pass. How much do you pull it up?
I mean, it's a weird thing because, you know, we talked about it last year when the Apple deal was first getting started, and for a lot of people out there, like it, you weren't just getting. If you weren't watching MLS on, you know, cable or for your local outlets, it was like, did you really watch it all? And I feel like, unlike the other carriers like ESPN Plus, Paramount Plus, Peacock, typically you're getting not just the league that you want to watch, but you're also getting complimentary. Content as well, you know, from movies, other sports, anything like that. And like with Apple and with MLS Season Pass, like you're paying $15, but it's just for MLS. And I feel like when, like you really have to be invested in simply wanting to watch just MLS in order to want to invest in it. And like, it's not even a case like where, possibly like offer like just like a team only package where like if I only follow Atlanta United, I can get a package for just Atlanta United games. Like we're not even getting that. Right. And I feel like that's something that, yeah, like I feel like you should offer because again, like you want to make sure that you still keep bringing as many people as possible to, you know, to keep your eyes on the product. Otherwise, you know, like they did actually have two games on Fox this weekend, but like, if it's not a team that you follow, like, is it even a guarantee that that people are going to watch it? Like, it's not like, it's not like the NFL where it doesn't, like, in most cases, people are still going to watch even if it's not your team. Like, I don't think MLS is in that space where people will just watch just because, and because it's two great teams. Like, we still have a bit more digging to go before we're in that space to where people are just watching either way. But it's just an interesting space. Of course, maybe when they're talking about expanding the roster rules, adding some cash in this summer, where it is they're splitting up the under 22 rule and the DPs. So like you can basically have three designated players, three under 22 project players, or you can do two DPs and four under 22s. So, and I think like an extra like 200,000 in Gam and Blam. I don't know, but
garbage bucks.
Yeah, but hopefully that does something. But I just feel like in a lot of ways, like it still comes back down to the product on the field and just getting people to want to invest. Because like it doesn't matter like how like who you sign or how big their name is. Like at some point, those players are going to leave, and it's still going to be about like what else do you have. I mean, like, I think we're still trying to ride the wave of Messi, but, you know, he's like, what, 37, 38 now? Like, he's not going to be there forever. So you got to, you know, have a succession plan so that way people are still going to be invested once that one big fish leaves. You know, it's interesting just to see, like, what they are trying to do to help maintain, other fans who aren't fans of Inter Miami, who aren't fans of Messi, to be like, hey, I still want to get involved in that.
It's fascinating you bring up Messi. Like, I just saw the goal. It was
that goal yesterday was pretty nice. I ain't gonna lie.
Yeah, yeah. And so, you know, they did a whole thing for that game. Sporting Kansas City did, yep. Right? So they didn't have their usual home stadium.
In Arrowhead at where the Chiefs play.
And when I saw the highlight for that goal, I was like, oh, damn, where are the Sporting KC fans?
You know what?
I mean, they were there. They were there.
They were there, but it's like, it's always weird when, like, you have these teams who obviously have, like, their own stadiums and everything, but you're clearly bumping it up to a bigger stadium that's in the area, and it's like, where are these fans when you're back at your regular stadium? Because clearly they want to see soccer at some level, but they're not coming to see you when if it's SKC versus RSL. Are you still coming through as deep, or is it just only when Messi's here? Like, you gotta like make up your mind here, because I mean.
I think in that case, they're not getting that crowd unless Messi's there.
Right. Right. And that's, like I said, I feel like that's a very, very, very big disconnect when it comes to, you know, wanting to invest in MLS, you know, on a regular, because like you gotta have more than just the gimmicks to, you know, get people interested. Otherwise, you end up in a space where you can only, where like 90% of your content is behind a paywall, and you know, even that, it granted, I said the Messi effect was huge for a season pass, but again, he ain't gonna be there forever. And then what you gonna do? So,
and that paywall thing, man. So I'm just gonna read a quote or a tweet. United Soccer League match on broadcast television, CBS.
Yes, I saw that.
0.23 and 362,000.
Nice.
And I guess whatever MLS on Fox game was that weekend was opposite the Final Four. But ooh, that came in at 0.13 and 211,000.
Damn.
So, like, and this really gets back to your point. You know what I mean? Like, USL is moving in this direction where they're, you know, getting more broadcast television opportunities.
Yeah.
And another league that's doing that is NWSL. They're putting stuff on their own NWSL Plus channel, which is free. I have Bay FC versus Seattle on right now.
Indeed.
Solid. They have a score bug, and you know we know what's going on, so that's good. But yeah, also like Ion, right? Ion is easy to find. It's free.
Is it?
Well, I mean, it was easy for me to find. I don't know, because I have a Roku, so I guess.
Yes, exactly.
But the most important thing, I didn't have to sign up for something.
You know? Right.
Have to pay for it. You know, it's like it's free over the year. So, like, and then, you know, they have Paramount and CBS and ABC. So it's like, they're filling the space that MLS has essentially abandoned.
Yeah. Well, I'm not going to say that they abandoned. I think that, you know, for what MLS wanted and for the ratings that they were getting at the time, I don't think there was a network that was willing to give them the price that they wanted. And I think that, again, like I feel like for USL as well as for NWSL, I would say more than likely the production costs aren't nearly as high. And so it's more cost effective, at least for the networks, to be like, hey, I'll go ahead and invest in this as compared to what we know this product brings or doesn't bring in. And, you know, maybe we have a sleeper hit and we can turn USL into sub. We can continue to make NWSL into an even bigger league than what it is right now. I mean, they're already talking about adding Boston next year. I will say, just to kind of circle back to the She Believe stuff, like I said, we got 50,000 last week in Atlanta. Sure. Ms. Berman, what we got to do here? Because Atlanta's ready. Atlanta is clearly ready.
A decent amount of people stayed for that second game, too. There were definitely more empty seats than people, but I would say there was a solid 10,000 people.
Yeah, I mean, like, I said, I feel like granted, it's probably in order to fill what they want to fill for the bins, that means we're probably going to have to spend like crazy. But I feel like even then, it's still going to be a drop in the bucket. And I feel like you'll still have the desired atmosphere that you want to have for the bins and for an Atlanta team. So, again, experiment. What we got to do here? Like, what else we got to do? You got the U.S. soccer headquarters here. They just broke ground on Monday. You had the She Believes stuff. Of course, you were all over the city last week. I'm like, what more do you want here? I mean, what we got to do? You want popcorn as well? I mean, like, what we got to do?
I mean, affordable concessions. So it's been a bit while since I've been to the Benz, right?
Yeah.
And I didn't eat before I went in. And I was like, man, I got to go get something.
You're hungry, cuz.
And we were hanging out with the homie TK, and he was like, they got the $2 hot dogs over there. I was like, $2 hot dogs. They were right there.
It's clutch.
Molly B's.
Yeah.
So it's like, that's one of the Benz. Like, I will say, like, I genuinely enjoy my experience at the Benz. I never get tired of it. Between the concessions, the freedom to be able to move about, you know, I think the sight lines are work in progress, but I think it's actually
better when they had that when they had that platform. So, like, because of course everything is higher up, so like you're able to see a little bit more. But I'm looking for, like, that was my first time seeing the bins with the grass platform. Of course, I'm hoping that did you ever hear what happened with Naomi Girma? What was the injury?
No, I thought something was her thigh, but I don't think they gave us much more updates. I know she didn't play last night, so.
That's the kind of stuff, like I said, it has me a little worried, but like I said, I feel like, you know, like we have enough time between now and 2026. Of course, we'll have the games this summer with the Copa America, plus we'll have some extra friendlies this summer. We'll have the opportunity to kind of like tweak what we need to, so hopefully by the Club World Cup, by the main World Cup, you know, we'll be in a really good space. But
I've heard that NFL players are starting to, you know, kind of make a push towards away from turf. You know,
I mean, everybody that's played long enough, they all prefer grass over turf. I mean, doesn't say that They're not saying that grass is, I'm sorry, that turf is completely bad. It's just that grass is just, it's more natural. It feels better on the joints and the body. And now that we showed this flexibility to be able to install a grass field, I would definitely say that we're going to use it more often than not, at least going into 2026. It'll be interesting to see like how, if they did try to do it for football, like when would they try to use it? Because I feel like you probably couldn't do it weekly like with the Falcons, but perhaps it may be something like for the New Year's Bowl games or for colleges and everything, maybe something like that. But yeah, it's interesting times, and hopefully you guys are checking us out on your favorite podcast apps and also on YouTube. But yeah, I definitely don't want to hold you guys up any longer. Again, we had an opportunity a couple of days back to chat with the Chief Sporting Director with Carolina Court FC, Mr. Eddie Pope. Again, shout out to their team for connecting with us. Yeah, we had a good 30-minute chat on last Wednesday. We hit up the core, talked about the U.S. Open Cup, hit up a little bit about his career, and just also, of course, with his role, what is he trying to look for as far as looking for that next latest and greatest, basically. But hopefully you guys enjoy it. We'll be back on the other side with Two Up and Two Down. And yeah, we're going to listen to myself and Mr. Pope right now. We are back here. I have a very special guest with us on the podcast with us. And I have to admit here, this is actually a pretty surreal moment because all this considered, like, the way that we got the attention of the team and then this man is like so random. For those of y'all that saw us do our Black History League draft a few weeks ago, one of our picks, the proud team of AC Couture, was the center back here that's with us today. Former member of DC United, U.S. national team. I mean, honestly, a person that's near and dear to my heart as a proud North Carolinian and myself. And yeah, we have the sporting director of Carolina Core FC. We have Eddie Pope on the pod with us. What is going on, Mr. Pope? How you doing?
I'm well. Thank you for having me on.
Hey, it's an absolute honor. Actually, hang on. I need to set the tone real quick. Give me one quick second.
Okay. There you go. Yes, sir.
Now, for those of y'all who obviously aren't seeing us yet on social media, like I said, I got a nice little talking piece in the background here that I will definitely get to before we end this interview. But how's your day going today, Eddie?
Can't complain. We just got finished with training today. Starting off strong.
Now, I like to educate the people when we have these interviews. Of course, again, you are the Chief Sporting Officer with Carolina Core FC. Tell us what exactly you do with the core.
Yeah, as you said, I'm the Chief Sporting Officer. You know, my role involves player selection, bringing in a coaching staff, getting them organized, on a daily basis, being out at training, watching training, chiming in when it makes sense. Helping with, putting together some training sessions from time to time, although we have a fantastic coaching staff that does that in general. Organizing, practices and then kind of connecting all of that with the front office and being a little bit of a bridge between the two. But I'd say the main roles, right, are just, player selection and recruiting and for MLS Next Pro and independent team, it's also helping players develop and then getting them out into MLS where they're all aspiring to be, or abroad as well.
Definitely. And I definitely have a question when we circle back at the end of this, because I definitely want to give a shout out to, of course, what you're looking for in the future. Of course, Carolina Core, they are just coming off of now two wins in the U.S. Open Cup. Last week, you beat Vermont Green 2-1, and you actually have a match next Wednesday against what used to be the big boys in North Carolina, North Carolina FC, and out in Raleigh. How are you feeling towards that match?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be extremely difficult. USL Championship team. Mm-hmm. See, they were last year's champs. They moved up. They retooled. They have some extremely experienced players. You know, typically, you know, USL Championship, the players are going to be a little bit older than our players. Certainly, we'll have more experience. So it's going to be a heck of a challenge for us, but we're looking forward to it.
Yeah, definitely. So you've been with the Corps for a little. I think you were there when the Corps was first announced. What got you interested in the Carolina Corps project, and obviously resulting in you being involved as the sporting officer?
Yeah, one of the investors of the club, and then also a potential investor at that time, reached out to me and said, "Hey, you know, I knew them before this." Said, "Hey, you know, there's a professional team coming to High Point," and I didn't know. And so I was like, I feel like I would have heard about that.
Right.
but I hadn't. And so, yeah, it was just, I started doing a little bit of due diligence through them and learning more and more about the project over those months. And it just seemed like it was going to be a good fit for me. So, you know, I owe it to those two individuals for getting me here and getting me involved with the club.
Yeah, definitely. I'm from North Carolina as well. I'm on the other from the other side out in Kinston, but I actually do have a lot of family in High Point and Greensboro. Most of my family actually went out to the Dudley and everything. So like I said, I'm vaguely aware of everything going out in Greensboro. So this has definitely been something I've kept an eye on. Of course, with Core, Shawd FC, like it's in of course with North Carolina FC, like the game's always been strong in the state, so it's definitely good to see this happening. Of course, as you've been progressing through the U.S. Open Cup, of course, a lot of controversy that came back when this tournament was starting this year, as far as MLS being involved and how it fit with the rest of lower league soccer. Like, how do you see like the importance of U.S. Open Cup and just in how the current environment of American pro soccer?
Yeah, I mean, I think with that, with all that happened there, I think that, you know, I think too many people took it as, well, MLS doesn't care about Open Cup. And but I think the reality of the situation is that the MLS schedules have become so extremely congested that it really became difficult for clubs to participate. I mean, it was a the schedule gets packed more and more so every year. And it was just really difficult. And I'd say also that, you know, MLS clubs now they have MLS Next Pro. So it provides a wonderful opportunity for those players who are looking to become MLS players to get significant minutes in those games. And I know, so, you know, it was, hey, well, why can't, you know, the MLS clubs play sort of their players who are on the bench, who haven't seen a lot of minutes in the Open Cup. And then those would be the ones who get on the field. But those players play in MLS Next Pro. So, you know, it that's kind of what is happening. And so I would say, you know, for our club personally, for me personally, I should say, you know, the U.S. Open Cup is important. And it's a tournament that I was fortunate enough to win.
So just a humble brag real quick.
Yeah. I would say, and that was my first year in the league. So I think, you know, right out the gate, it was obviously going to be something that I felt was significant to my career. And but I say for our club as well, it's just been something that's been important. It's an extremely difficult tournament, as we're about to find out probably next week. Going up, I mean, what an experience for our players. We went up to Vermont Green, an away game, you know, in front of thousands of people. That crowd was probably the largest that a lot of our players had ever played in front of ever.
Wow.
Some of them had never seen snow before in their life.
Yeah, you don't get it too much around North Carolina. You don't get it.
Yeah, so there's a lot of firsts for a lot of our players. So, I mean, so how do you replace that experience, right? So I think for us, we're happy that we were able to be involved in the Open Cup.
Yeah, definitely. I didn't even think about that. Like, cause of course it's still up north and they probably still have snow. Like, I remember just being a kid in Raleigh and I was just like, yeah, like when we got snow, if like we get that half an inch, we were doing something. So
yeah. Shut it down.
But, being from the Carolinas and everything, how did you find the game and what was your experience growing up as obviously a young Black kid, around High Point?
Yeah, I mean, back then, soccer was just kind of growing, and for me, the higher level of soccer then was travel soccer. Right. So if you were going somewhere to go play, then you were at the highest level in your state, and then obviously at some point, Olympic development program came, and the sport continued to grow, but we were on par with I'd say every other state. In regards to growth, and so soccer, to me, has always been super important in North Carolina. I feel like the Carolinas has always been a hotbed for soccer, whether it was Raleigh-Durham or Charlotte or High Point, Greensboro, Winston-Salem area. Mm-hmm. And then you started to see some of the areas on the coast, Wilmington, Jacksonville, come along, and now you can have the teams in Asheville, right? So it's really grown quite a bit, and we've kept pace with that, with anywhere else in the country, and a lot of times ahead of the game, even, especially from a collegiate standpoint. For me, when I was younger, like a lot of Black kids, was the only Black player on my team,
right,
most of the time. Every now and then, you might have one more, and you would always look across the field, and they'd have their one Black player on the team, and that's obviously gotten a little bit better. I don't think it's where it needs to be, but we've also now seen more Latinos be involved in the game at the higher levels as well. So it's come a long way.
Yeah, definitely. To pivot a little bit, let's talk about the U.S. national team. Of course, we are in a very big cycle right now, leading up to 2026 and the World Cup coming here to the U.S. As well as Canada and Mexico. I guess the question I have is, like, what are you looking for from the national team from a performance perspective, both from the Copa coming on this summer, as well as from a developmental perspective from the Olympics coming later on this summer?
Yeah, I mean, first and foremost, you got to get there. and then I'd say once you in each of those events, it's how are the players developing as individuals, and then are we improving the way that we play as a team? Everybody wants to see us play in a way where possession is important. We're not just lumping the ball up the field unless the game requires that. But I would say for me, even in the last World Cup, I thought that we did that. I thought that we looked like a team that that knew how to play together, that knew how to keep the ball, knew how to possess the ball, knew how to work its way up the field, knew how to defend. And we just came up against a better team in Holland, in the Netherlands. And the game ended the way it should have ended. But for me, I mean, obviously the expectation is you're now consistently getting out of your group, no matter what. And I would say that, whether it's the Olympics or whether it's the World Cup, that's now the expectation. And then to also start to see the development of newer players who were kind of being brought into the fold and how they function within the team. I'm excited about it. How could you not be excited about it being at home? The team, we're going to be there no matter what, right? So, which is good. But for the Olympics, we want to make sure that, we're able to get there, right? We're able to do what we need to do. But again, I think it's how we play, the style that we play. Everybody always says, what's our style? Brazil has a style or France has a style. I mean, I just think nowadays it's just more about how we possess the ball as a team and how we look individually. Do we attack well? 1v1, do we defend well? And I think that we're moving in the right directions on both fronts.
Yeah, I'd be more than curious to kind of pick your brain on that, because I feel like given how we have a very, very unique situation as far as our player pool, because, of course, you're talking about different cultures, different races, obviously different regions of the country, and everyone kind of deals with plays their own different way. So, and how you're trying to bring that all into one national team, that's always something that I feel like it's very unique to us, probably more different than any other country out there.
Yeah, and I think you can use those different styles and backgrounds to your advantage. And, you know, maybe it's not so easy to pin down, you know, a style of play, which some may say, well, that maybe that hurts us. But I think you can do that within a structured framework. And if we have players who are good on the ball 1v1, then, you know, that's something we want to take advantage of. We have players who are good in possession in the midfield, and it's hard to take the ball from them. That's good, too. We have bigger, stronger guys in the back, but who are also good with the ball at their feet, and they can pass, and their passing range is you know, more than just 5 yards in front of them. I think because we have different types of people here, that's also different types of, you know, height and weight and strength and speed. We should be using all of that to our advantage.
Definitely. Now, of course, this week, we had the groundbreaking of the new U.S. soccer headquarters down here south of Atlanta, but I'm down in Fayetteville. Of course, with Atlanta having the 96 Olympics and now being the new home of U.S. soccer, do you feel that the scene has come full circle in the South as far as the growth of soccer in down here?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, obviously once Atlanta had their Atlanta United showed up, and people were like, oh my gosh, they do like soccer down there. we all knew, and especially if you grew up playing soccer in North Carolina, then you knew that was a hotbed for soccer. And you're kind of like, why are we not opening this up in the South? And why are we not opening this up in Charlotte? Because Charlotte's bigger than Atlanta. When will that happen? And boy, have both of them really have done a phenomenal job of not only, you know, when they were first year franchises and just breaking records like every year when they open, it's just been enjoyable to watch, just both, you know, Charlotte and Atlanta, watching them just blossom as clubs has just been enjoyable.
Yeah. You should have seen me 10, 15 years ago. I was like, hey, Raleigh is right here. Like, of course, we know that North Carolina has been such a major hotbed for the game. And I'm like, yeah, just go ahead, just flood it all the way through the state. But yeah, that's me getting off my soapbox for a little bit. But yeah, going back to, of course, I do want to talk about you and your career. Like, what was your favorite or greatest MLS memory or possibly with the national team?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I think MLS is the first MLS Cup.
In the rain,
scoring a goal in that game, which is such an important moment for me. I think just confidence wise and being a younger player who just kind of shown up. I'd say the national team, clearly it was just the first time, you know, I played in a World Cup match. And I think when you line up and you hear your national anthem, you know, you kind of have little flashbacks of all those moments that got you there. And so for me, I would just say the very first game of my very first World Cup was a great moment for me.
Yeah, I remember everything from that first year. I remember very vividly, because back then I was still living in Richmond. So like DC United was pretty much like my team growing up. And I just remember watching that first MLS Cup and up in Foxborough with that. I mean, the rain was just awful.
Crazy,
just,
yeah.
I can only imagine how it was for y'all, but I was like, yeah, like this is, that can't be fun. but yeah, circling back, again, like with Carolina Core, you're in a unique position with MLS Next Pro. What do you feel like, what are some of the most important aspects or traits that a player can carry into today's game?
At MLS Next Pro, and you know, one of the things that, you know, are super important is player development. You know, everybody wants to win, and that is extremely important. But, you know, you have to balance that with player development, because the goal is for players to come into these teams and move on to the first team. And if they're, you know, good enough, then they maybe move on and play in Europe or somewhere else. So player development is really one of the, you know, the most important things. And I think if, you know, you're asking like, what's a good trait to bring? I think one of them will be patience, because a lot of times they come in and it's almost always harder than they think it is. You know, especially with MLS Next Pro, I think people are, well, it's, you know, how good is the league really? But when you, now that we've started to fold in these independent teams, I think you're going to see over the next 3 to 5 years, as the league gets flooded with more independent teams, the level is going to continue to increase. But I would also say for the existing MLS Next Pro teams, MLS Next academies are 100% preparing players for the professional level. I mean, I've been very impressed at how good some of these young players are. And a lot of that is because they came out of MLS Next academies where the coaching is good. You're seeing former professional players who are becoming the head coaches, former collegiate players who are the head coaches, and they're mimicking a model that the parent club has. And then they have access to some of them $30-40 million training facilities. And then they also have the visualization now of an MLS Next Pro team and then an MLS club. Sometimes you can't do it if you can't see it. And a lot of these players are around that environment and they're breathing the game, and it's making a significant difference. And I think over the next 5 to 10 years, I mean, the game's already grown so much. We can see, we were talking about Charlotte and Atlanta, but it's also doing the same thing for players. And so I think it really is just patience. As players come in, it's harder than they think it is when they first get here, and they have to give themselves time to develop and really be able to take their game to the next level.
Gotcha. And kind of on kind of to piggyback on that, obviously you're telling them like what to look for. Like when you watch games nowadays, like who do you like to watch? Like what players stand out to you?
I mean, I enjoy watching EPL. I think that's, you know, a lot of people's favorite league because, you know, there's, you look at the top 5 to 7 teams, and the soccer is fun to look at, right? It's very fluid. The players are so good. There's such a high level. You know, teams almost have national team players starting in every single position. So the level is extremely high. The stands are packed. You know, it's just a great product, on-field product. And then of course, you know, watching La Liga is fantastic. And then more than anything else, Champions League, when they all come and clash, as we saw like yesterday, right?
Yeah. Crazy amazing, game yesterday.
Some great games yesterday. But it's amazing. Like that level is so extremely high, and it'll be fun that we'll have a lot of those players on, you know, here in the U.S. here soon. And not to mention Copa America as well. So.
Yeah, definitely. This summer should be very busy. I'm hoping to get back home. Definitely during June, because of course you have Copas down here, but of course the one tournament that's actually near and dear to my heart is the TST. I'm hoping everything I heard last year, I was like, that's something that I definitely want to check out. Mm-hmm. But before we wrap up here, I did want to ask just a couple more questions. And one that's obviously near and dear to us: what does culture in the game mean to you?
When you say culture, what are you referring to most?
Black culture. Yeah.
Yeah. I think for, you know, in regards to Black culture, you know, one of the things that, you know, that when I was growing up, it wasn't cool to play soccer. Soccer was a sport that wasn't for Black kids. You should be playing basketball and baseball and football, which I was playing, but you know, it wasn't like the cool sport. And that's changed some. Some of it has just been technology and kids. You know, you turn on the TV now and you see a lot of Black players playing. And if you start to learn that, well, what sport do they play in Africa, right? Well, they play soccer. So I think there's been some of that's gone on. But I think we still have to continue to do a better job at the grassroots level of trying to continue to, which will be difficult, you know, kind of peel back the layers of pay to play. You need to get the sport in certain communities. For our MLS Next Academy and all the other ones really as well, at least MLS Next Academies, you know, it's free of charge. Now the key is the years before that and getting, you know, kids of color there. And, but I think that's been kind of cool. I think it's changed quite a bit as to a sport that just, you know, quote unquote, wasn't for us, is now for everybody. And, I'd like to see that continue.
Yeah, definitely. Of course, for I'm sure that anyone that's familiar with soccer in North Carolina, again, this is a man that I think the resume kind of speaks for itself. Do y'all typically take like tryouts, or is a certain period of time during the year? Like what's the best way for people to say, hey, I want to go out and be a part of the core?
Yeah, we had tryouts before the season started. My guess is, you know, we may do it again. And we always have that on our website. We always announce that, for sure. I'd say we probably had a total of easily 300 people that tried out, 250 to 300, something like that, that came and tried out. And, I would foresee us doing something like that again, before the next season. And, I'd say that's probably the best way that people can find out about it. But again, it's on social media. It's, you know, it's just everywhere. So it will not be hard to find.
Gotcha. Yes. And you can find Carolina Core FC on Twitter, AKA X, at Carolina Core _FC. And yes, this jersey back here. When I got into my whole bit of jersey collecting and customizing that we often do here at FTC, the first jersey I purchased, MLS jersey that I purchased, was a DC United jersey. It was 2011. And when I went to go get it personalized, I was like, who do I want to get? Because, I mean, I knew, obviously, the original dynasty from the 90s, yourself, John Harkes, Raul Diaz Arce, Marco Echeverri. I was like, who should I get? And I was like, it absolutely had to be Eddie Pope, because I remember being that tall, skinny kid, you know, that you were the person that easily connected with me when I saw players out in the pitch. And like I said, from seeing your career through DC United, through Real Salt Lake, and also obviously through the national team, I was like, you've always been my guy. And of course, you being from North Carolina, as I am, I was like, that absolutely had to be us. Like, I've held on to this one for the better part of 15 years now. And I'm like, yeah, when Aiden reached out to me, I was like, oh, we're talking about this jersey. Cause yeah, this was absolutely special to me. But, I'm absolutely honored to have you, on the pod. And again, you can reach, Carolina Court _FC. Again, Mr. Pope, absolute honor to have you on. Did you have any things you wanted to shout out, plug, anything like that?
No, I just heard that you guys might have a jersey I might be interested in. That's what I heard.
Okay. We are working on these AC Cultura jerseys. And yes, like I designed that myself. So yeah, like I'm working with Icarus right now to get those produced. Hopefully we nice. Can announce something towards the end of this month. But yeah, like I said, that's part of my self-care, honestly. Like when I'm bored and I have things and I just have them like trying to, you know, keep my mind occupied, I will design all day long. Like I got scarves, jerseys, anything. But yes, it's absolutely honored to have you on. And hopefully we can connect in soon.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
Well, there you have it. I have to admit to you guys, like, I don't know if it's because of the time constraints or just my own nervousness, but hopefully you guys liked the interview. Thanks again to Mr. Eddie Pope. Shout out to Aiden. He's one of their social media guys with the core for, again, putting this all together. We have been trying to get this done for like probably the last 2 or 3 weeks. And of course, they were in the middle of their U.S. Open Cup run. Of course, they have a game this Wednesday against the North Carolina FC. So that should be a pretty big game for them. And hopefully I can get my my Eddie Pope jersey signed. Cause yeah, like again, like when I went into all of my, let's just say my jersey customizing, rabbit hole, it kind of all starts with that jersey. It really does. You know, like, I got that jersey in 2011, and I was still living in Maryland at the time, and the season was about to start. And like that was one of the first when I moved into my apartment in Silver Spring, that was one of the first purchases that I made. And when I again like when I wanted to get it personalized, I was like he was the first person that came up. Like I was like I didn't want to get anybody current because, of course, I feel like you never know like how current players are going to turn out. And like if you end up getting like a Man United jersey and you get a Phil Jones jersey, then it's going to be like, Luckily for me, I had ulterior reasons as far as why I got a Phil Jones 4 jersey, but because that's my family's name on my mom's side, but yeah, like unless that person's been there at least a good 5 years, it doesn't make sense to get someone that just got there. Like it just doesn't work.
Yeah.
But yes, for all of you out there, of course, if you got somebody that you got in mind, or maybe you want to do something for yourself, make sure you hit up your boys at FTCUTD.com/shop. Get your name says, get your t-shirts. I just saw today we got a double order for the Racism Counter shirts because they are back in stock. So make sure you hit up those. And again, like we've been doing pretty well with the new jerseys for this year. And definitely, if you still have yet to get your jersey personalized yet and you need that special touch from your fam, from your boys, hit us up. FTCUTD.com/shop, and we make it silky smooth, as they say. But yeah, we're not gonna hold you guys too much longer. We're gonna go ahead and hop up in this 2 Up and 2 Down. Mr. Mark, what you got, man?
Yeah, my 2 Up 2 Down is gonna be women's sports focused. So the up first one we kind of covered earlier, but you know, just the U.S. women's national team, being able to see them in person, and you know, they definitely had some adversity, like allowing a goal within a minute, but you know, we saw them prevail in the She Believes, and we saw it happen through you know, Trinity, Sophia Smith, Mal Pugh, Jaden Shaw. Them playing together, and you know, they had their individual moments where they shine. Jaden Shaw had that beautiful, beautiful goal in Atlanta. Just like a perfect little strike. Like it was just like you couldn't have thrown it any better than that. It was just gorgeous. And so, yeah, it was great to see that, you know, partly in person and just, you know, in general, hopefully this group is in a good spot that MAAs can take this and, you know, kind of run with it in the Olympics. Now, my down that's U.S. Women's National Team related is how they've gone about the Corbin Albert situation.
She played in
both matches of that, right? She was called. So, like, calling her up, I kind of understood. Because it's like, okay, let's get her around the group. Let's, you know, have these conversations that need to be had. Let's handle these things and so forth, right? I get that.
Hold on. Back up, Brooklyn. Let's give people some context as far as what exactly happened here.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So for those of you who haven't heard, it was revealed that Corbin Albert on TikTok liked and reposted. She reposted some things on TikTok that was, you know, mainly the most egregious stuff was anti-trans. You know, it appeared that she was, the content that she reposted was like conversion therapy sort of things. There's also just a lot of bizarre reposts on there, you know, like stuff like cisgender is a slur, and you know, date right, and just a lot of real shaky stuff, right? She also liked a post that was basically, I think, either celebrating or wishing injury upon Megan Rapinoe.
I think it was wishing. Either way, it's like that's fucking shady,
right? Yeah, exactly. You know, it's crazy, right? It's like, this is a teammate of yours. And like, just in general, just a colleague, that a fellow colleague who plays the game, like, you never, never wish injury upon somebody. So, yeah, you know, like, just stuff that, and then there was a response from Megan Rapinoe, and, you know, she didn't even, you know, she wasn't concerned about the personal jab. She was concerned about, you know, the anti-trans messages that Corbin was reposting, you know, and so, you know, she gave her support to the trans community, and, you know, basically give a message of, you know, if you essentially support that, or rather, you know, you may have your religious beliefs, but what are you actually bringing to the world? You know, because if all you're bringing is hate and cruelty, you need to wake up, you know? And so, you know, she was strong and resolute, as she always is. And then also other players, you know, upon this getting out there, other players like, well, I know Alex Morgan and Lindsey Horan addressed it in the first press conference they did for She Believes. And I forget, I know that other players came out and basically gave their support to the trans community. I mean, this is something that the U.S. Women's National Team has literally worn Protect Terrence Kidd's wristbands during games, you know? So, like, obviously, as a program, and this group in particular, that is something that they stand for. So, you know, all that to say, it's like, okay, how would they go about handling this, right? And so, you know, on the one hand, I can understand wanting to bring her around the group and have those conversations and all that. But then you play her, right, in both games. And in the second, well, in the first game, you sandwiched her sub in between Kat Macario and Crystal Dunn. Right. And that was Kat Macario's return to the national team. Like, you basically kind of ruined her moment a bit. You know, and this is a point that Andre and Courtney made on Diaspora United. So, yeah, that was pretty fun. You know, how they went about that is pretty fun. It's just not really clear, like, that there were necessarily consequences in this situation. So, yeah. That, you know, like I said, I think they could handle that better. There's actually a quote from Andre, where, and this is from something he wrote, but basically he says, "I'm not sure U.S. Soccer has thought of or cares about the message sent by Albert being available for both matches and coming on. Is there a standard or not? If so, who does it apply to? Who is it meant to protect? Who's left out? Why is that okay with the Federation?" You know, so, yeah, so just they're going to need to do better. I think we could think that much can be said.
Yes.
My second up is women's college basketball. You know, they had a phenomenal tournament, lots of intrigue. I think, I don't know if Iowa was one of the two best teams, but. You know, they have Caitlin Clark, who's pretty good. And, you know, South Carolina's obviously
from last year,
they went undefeated. You know, they had an entirely new starting five from last year, and they just ran the table.
And, Atlanta's own Raven.
You know, Caitlin Clark started off on a heater, but Raven Johnson had her moment, right? After getting waved off like it. Oh, I didn't know that. Oh, yeah. Okay. But, yeah, you know. 18. But most of all.
Yes. The highest rated basketball game. Men, women, college, pro, anywhere in like the last 5 years. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's crazy. 18.7 million, right? You know, and so it's women's sports isn't the future. It's here, you know. And finally, I think this is what we've seen is the result of proper investment, you know, actual belief by these, you know, media outlets, you know, between the marketing and the presentation. Sure. You know, I think this
Want this energy to translate over to the WNBA. We've seen their ratings also continue to go up since the pandemic. And like, to me, the dynamic with Caitlin Clark, and let's not forget Andrew Reese in that dynamic as well, it gives a lot of Bird versus Magic energy.
Yeah.
And for those of y'all who aren't the history buffs that we might be, remember that rivalry started in college in the Final Four in 1979. And that went over, crossed over into the NBA, and of course they happened to go into probably the two most perfect markets for those two players, and really were responsible for turning the NBA into the media juggernaut that we know it today. Like, that all started with those two guys. So we could quite possibly be having that moment with women's basketball, to where the WNBA, if they take advantage of this, can turn this into where they are a formidable presence in TV and streaming and everything. And if they don't take advantage of this, it's you're going to know why, because again, like when you see numbers like 14 million, 18 million, it's like, clearly you have talents that people, men or women, want to watch. So now it's on the pro league to make something out of it and make it so where their league is something that people want to watch, whether it's in the summer or quite hopefully during a traditional basketball season calendar. But you know, either way, they got some gold here.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, I think just like women's college basketball, you know, they have a good platform as it is, like you mentioned. You know, the ratings have been increasing since the pandemic. And so I think it's at a good spot to continue taking off, you know, with the right marketing, with the right approach, with television, with the right approach, with products, right? Like, how often do we see in women's sports, you're trying to get some women's sports gear and they're sold out, you know, like that. That's you just leaving money on the table. So, but yeah, I mean, like I'm excited for the WNBA. I think it's going to be a big season for them. You know, I'm definitely going to make an effort personally to watch more games than I have before. See what I'm trying to decide if I'm going to be a Mystics or a Dream fan. You know, because I mean, I hope
they're right down the road down College Park, right? Like. Almost right adjacent to the airport.
I would actually be able tickets to aren't
very
games, you know,
so. Expensive. They're probably like 10, 15 bucks, if that, you know, for most of the tickets in the arena. And, you know, I'm not going to say that we're close personal friends with Renee Montgomery, but, you know, we got this thing on Twitter. So, you know, we cool. So, you know, like I said, we definitely might have to pull up on a couple games this year.
Oh.
I'm just saying.
Okay.
I'm just saying. Okay. We'll see how long. We'll see how deep the plug.
I'm gonna have to hit you up for the court sides. right. My downside is, so I want to be very clear about something. I enjoy watching Caitlin Clark. I think she's a great talent. I think that she will eventually do well in the WNBA. But the Caitlin Clark fanboys and girls, the people who like clearly don't watch women's basketball or haven't put the effort into it before, you know, these people are saying that, oh, Caitlin Clark's either, you see, there's one of two things you see. one, Caitlin Clark's going to kill it at the next level, or two, y'all need Caitlin Clark to for your league to survive, for anyone to pay attention to it. And it's just demonstrably false, right? Like, the W fans are there, you know what I mean? Like,
yep.
And I think this erasure of the previous stars, well, not even previous, but the current stars, and, you know, even like stars in their prime, stars a little bit older, like Dana Taurasi. But it's, I think it's crazy to disrespect these athletes and the people who've been covering this game as these ratings have been going up, right? As more and more people are paying attention. And like the W right now is in a great place talent wise. It's hard to break into the league and become a star, you know? So I don't know. It's just, it bothers me a lot when people are basically like, what people do is basically like, look, I'm watching because of Caitlin Clark.
That's kind of like the same thing that we're talking about with Messi. It's like, you know,
and it's like,
There are other players beyond Messi, and you know, it's up to you if you want to, you know, check out whatever else is out there. But I mean, it's the same thing with Caitlin Clark. Like, you got, you know, like I said, you literally had a team who went undefeated, but you're acting like this is the person who just can't lose no matter what. And I'm like, you know, you have to understand, like, this team over here replaced their whole starting five and just ran the table. Like, you have the first black head coach to win three national championship games. And, you know, it's not like the game is going to stop with Caitlin Clark now that she's going on to the pros course. The WNBA draft is Monday night, and she should be going to the Indiana Fever. And mind you, like, Indiana Fever already got like a former Naismith winner in Aaliyah Boston. So it's like, that should be a very watchable team pretty soon. So, and of course, you still have the Aces that should be back pretty strong. You still have the Liberty that should be back pretty strong. And, you know, it's again, like, we just got to continue that energy. So that way, you know, it doesn't just stop for a lot of players at college. Like, they're able to translate that into, a lot of that exposure continuing at the pro level as well. And, you know, make the WNBA truly, truly viable at a much bigger level. So, you know, it's okay. And again, and one more thing, if y'all ain't on the Juju train by now, I don't know what to tell you. So. Mm-hmm.
Bruh. The moment
she all I'm gonna up, tell you was this: was the next five national championships, the team's gonna be USC. It's just gonna be a matter of whether it's South Carolina or Southern Cal. So make up your mind. Cool.
Facts.
Yeah, like I said, it's been an interesting few weeks since we last came on. I'm probably going to talk about this a bit more probably on our next episode, but long story short is we are out of the two cents FC business. I'll go into more detail about it probably in the next episode, but I'm gonna just make that announcement pretty clear cut right now. And I think that it's something that we probably have needed to do for quite a while. Like, I feel like when, especially considering the lack of episodes and recording that we've done, I'm pretty sure y'all have noticed in, you know, probably the last 7 or 8 months, it's definitely been as a result of that relationship kind of just breaking down and just not wanting to, you know, do work for people who clearly don't want you in their business. So like I said, we'll discuss that in more detail probably in the next episode. Like, you know, I feel like that's probably both an up and a down. So, you know, take it for what you want. But Let me go ahead and give y'all another up real quick. I'll give you a personal one. Probably for the last month or so, I've gotten back into therapy. It's something that, I'm not going to say that I've been avoiding. It's just more so like finding the time, finding the money to get this done. I got a solid benefactor that said, hey, if this is what you do, I will take care of it myself. So, shout out to you know who for that. And again, like, you know, we're peeling back some layers. I think so it's not the first time I've done therapy before, but I think the things that I'm discussing is something that I probably haven't done since probably my mom passed. Of course, we're coming up on the anniversary of her passing. It'll be not tomorrow Monday, but the following Monday, the 22nd. And the funny thing is that the things that I've told my therapist, it's like it gets a little hot and heavy, because like we end up kind of like running over on times. I'm like, hey, you know, it's a lot. And, you know, hopefully, getting some answers already have definitely helped me as far as my outlook on things. And, I'm looking forward to just the continuing peeling of the onion and seeing where we go. Last but not least, I really only have one major down, because I think it's a down for the culture in Atlanta as a whole. This past Saturday, we got word that Rico Wade, one of the co-founders of the Organized Noise Studios, co-founder of Outkast, Goody Mob, pretty much that whole clique, like, that all really came from Rico Wade. And so like the sound that you largely know from Atlanta came from the mind of Rico Wade, as well as Sleepy Brown. And Pat, he passed away on Saturday at the age of 52. You know, I've said it before and I'll say it again. Getting old is hard work, and we all have to, you know, take responsibility for, you know, making sure that we actually do make it to having a long life and, you know, enjoying the people around us. So, you know, prayers and thoughts to his whole family, his whole network. And I know it definitely sounded like it was very sudden and nobody saw it coming. And again, like it's just tough, because again, you talk about a man who truly was like the essence of whatever people call an influencer. That's him. And, you know, just given everything that he's done for, you know, Atlanta culture, Black culture as a whole, hip hop, I mean, monuments should be built for the work that's been done from Organized Noise. And lost a real son of Atlanta, but again, next week, like I said, we're going to get more regular with these episodes now that we're shedding some weight and everything. So definitely it shouldn't be more than, definitely won't be 4 weeks again. I can definitely tell you that. If you haven't done so already, make sure that you check out the Chop It Up session that we were happy to do with Shea Butter back last week in Atlanta at the AUC. We had Curtis Jenkins from former president of Footy Mob, our sister Vera Ziegler, she was also on. We've managed to get Coach Tony on the round table as well. And again, we were able to really just chop it up and just talk about, you know, U.S. soccer coming to Atlanta and what this means. Also got a chance to discuss that even with Eddie Pope as well. Because again, when people say the South got something to say, like, you're going to find out what the South got to say in the next few years, because, you know, soccer in the South about to really blow up something serious. And but yeah, again, look out for us. I'm still kind of trying to figure out how to do this, how do our social media thing now, because, like, before the hack, it was so easy, you know, FTC, UTD. But now that, you know, got to deal with this damn hack, it's not quite the same anymore. So, of course, you can find us on the socials, FTC, UTD pod on Instagram, TikTok, and Threads. You can still find us on Twitter at FTC. And you know, the conversation still continues there. Shout out to Crunk Chocolate. One of the guys on the Shades of Blue podcast, he managed to wrangle me into finally doing a wrestling podcast. So if you happen to be into all the WrestleMania stuff, all the AEW stuff, check out YFW Podcast. We're on all platforms, and we're about, what, two episodes in. Like, we did a WrestleMania preview, then a WrestleMania review. So, you know, check that out and everything. But yeah, in the meantime, in between time, it's your boy Grego here. Thanks to me, Mark. Thanks to Eddie Pope for coming on and blessing us. And yeah, until then, the coach is real. Posts everywhere. Remember, y'all, not everybody's on the same team as you. So, you know, stay alert, stay alive. We will see y'all soon, and we out.
FTC UTD.